Day, President Trump rambled about Americans from Somalia. He also talked of deporting a U.S. citizen, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. The Congresswoman responds in this hour of Morning Edition from NPR News. The president fired another batch of immigration judges. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. The judges resolve immigration cases, deciding if people should be deported. So why is the deportation president firing so many? Also, Lucy Liu takes on a lead role in a movie about how far a mother will go to protect her son. It's Thursday, December 4th. This day in 1956, Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins walked into a recording studio. Their jam session became the Million Dollar Quartet. The news is next.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. A report from the Pentagon's Inspector General sharply criticizes Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, saying he endangered U.S. troops by sharing highly sensitive attack plans for airstrikes against Yemen in March on the public messaging app Signal. NPR's Greg Myrie has more.
All of these senior government officials at work and at home have rooms where they can communicate securely on government systems known as SCIFs, a sensitive compartmented information facility. And this is what all of them should have been using. Instead, they were on Signal, a publicly available app anyone can download.
The Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg spoke to NPR's Morning Edition.
There were two problems with the chat. One, that it was happening in a commercial messaging app. And the second was that they didn't know who they had added into the chat, namely me, and, you know, violating basic rules of good digital hygiene.
NPR CEO Catherine Marr also chairs the board of the Signal Foundation. Ukrainian and U.S. negotiators meet in Florida today following Special Envoy Steve Witkoff's talks with Russian President Putin in Moscow this week. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports no real progress was made, though both sides say the talks were productive.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed that his negotiators would head to Florida after briefing the Europeans on the U.S.-Russian talks. Russia continues to press on the battlefield in an effort to improve its position at the negotiating table. The Kremlin claims to have taken the eastern city of Pokrovsk after a year and a half of brutal fighting and heavy losses. Ukraine denies the claim. In a statement on X, Zelensky said there is now a real opportunity to end the war. But as Kyiv and cities across Ukraine continue to come under near-nightly attack, Zelensky said negotiations must be accompanied by pressure on Russia. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kyiv.
A CDC vaccine advisory panel meets today to consider whether to change a longstanding recommendation to vaccinate all newborns against hepatitis B. NPR's Maria Godoy reports.
Hepatitis B is a virus that attacks the liver. The disease can lead to liver cancer, cirrhosis, and death. And the risks are much higher for people infected as infants. Before the U.S. began universally vaccinating newborns in 1991, some 18,000 children each year became infected before age 10. About half were infected by their mothers at birth. The other half got it from somewhere else. The virus is found in blood and other bodily fluids, and it can live on surfaces for up to a week. The risks are everywhere. Infections have been documented at daycares, on sports teams, from shared toothbrushes and razors. Since vaccination at birth became routine, hepatitis B case rates in the U.S. have plummeted by 99%.
This is NPR. Delta Airlines says it lost $200 million in profits during the longest government shutdown in history. Melissa Fato from member station WABE has more.
The 43-day shutdown caused delays and cancellations in major airports as unpaid air traffic controllers missed work, ultimately leading the Federal Aviation Administration to order airlines to cancel up to 6% of their domestic flights at 40 airports. Delta is the first U.S. airline to disclose the exact financial impacts of the shutdown. CEO Ed Bastian told investors that refunds grew significantly and bookings slowed during that period. Bastian also said comments from Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy over controller shortages and travel safety led more customers to hold off on booking tickets. More than 10,000 flights were cut nationwide between November 7th and November 16th. For NPR News, I'm Melissa Fato in Atlanta.
President Trump says he's reversing vehicle fuel efficiency standards put into place by President Biden. If the plan is finalized next year, it would ease pressure on automakers to control pollution from gas-powered trucks and cars. The proposal would significantly reduce fuel economy requirements through the 2031 model year, requirements that set rules on how far new vehicles need to travel on a gallon of gas. Environmentalists say the rule change would increase pollution and raise prices for consumers by allowing less fuel-efficient cars. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include 20th Century Studios with Ella McKay, a new comedy from James L. Brooks, starring Emma Mackey, Jamie Lee Curtis, with Albert Brooks and Woody Harrelson. Ella McKay, in theaters December 12th.
It's the people of northern Minnesota that power KAXE.
I'm a member because I feel a sense of belonging being part of KAXE, because I know that they are representing me and the communities and people in our area and the work that we're doing in such a truthful and honest way. I love being able to share it nationally and tell people I've met across the nation, like, you can understand more about what it's like to live in northern Minnesota by listening online. There's so much that is of value to people anywhere. It's just an honor to contribute and be part of it.
Help us out. Tell us why you are a member. Text us at 218-326-1234 and keep KAXE powered. We're independent, we're local, we're not run by corporations, the government, or a national network. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Representative Ilhan Omar for her response to remarks by President Trump about her and many of her constituents. For 2 days in a row, the president has gone on racist tirades against the Somali community in Minnesota.
The Somalians should be out of here. They've destroyed our country. And all they do is complain, complain, complain.
In a ramble that went on for several minutes on Wednesday, the president talked about Somalis as a group, including many citizens who employ him. Trump also talked about deporting Omar, a U.S. citizen who is a member of Congress. In the middle of his discussion, he threw in a mention of former President Obama, although Trump did not say what he thought Obama and Somalis might have in common. He was following up on Tuesday's ramble when he discussed Somalis and others convicted of defrauding social service programs in Minnesota.
We're going to go the wrong way if we keep taking in garbage into our country. Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage. Her friends are garbage. These aren't people that work. These aren't people that say, let's go. Come on, let's make this place great.
NPR's Mara Liasson is here to tell us more about all this. Good morning, Mara.
Good morning.
So, you know, Mara, we've heard Trump target immigrant groups before, from the first day of his first campaign for president, in fact. But calling an entire community of people garbage, I mean, is there something different here?
Yes. I think even by Trump's standards of nativism and xenophobia, these attacks were pretty harsh. You know, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has been one of Trump's favorite targets for quite some time. He belittled her on social media recently, saying she's, quote, always wrapped in her swaddling hijab. He's told her to go back where she came from, even though she's an American citizen. And this does come, as you say, at a time when there's this big financial scandal in Minnesota. Federal prosecutors have convicted or indicted dozens of people for defrauding social services funding totaling hundreds of millions of dollars, according to Minnesota Public Radio. Most of those convicted are of Somali descent. The vast majority of Somalis in the Minneapolis region are U.S. citizens, but the situation has provided the chance for Trump to attack Omar and the entire Somali community. And here's what he said.
They contribute nothing. The welfare is like 88%. They contribute nothing. I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you.
So let me just say here that there's no evidence of that what he said is accurate. But having said that, what do you think he gains from this?
I think this has been a tried and true tactic for him over the last 10 years, these nativist attacks. I think they attract attention. They can distract from problems he's having. You know, he denigrated Mexican immigrants as rapists and criminals. And during the 2024 campaign, he and J.D. Vance repeated false rumors that Haitian immigrants were eating cats and dogs.
Could it be that he's also lashing out because he's frustrated? I mean, his approval ratings are low. He has not achieved a number of the things that he claimed he was going to achieve, including peace in Ukraine, etc. And I just wonder if this part of the way he reacts to situations where he's not doing well.
I think that's right. His approval ratings are low. His base is solid, but independents give him a 25% approval rating, and Republicans are going to need those independent voters in the 2026 elections. Maybe they would rather have him bring prices down than attack immigrants.
So we don't know whether this is going to continue. As we mentioned, this has gone on for a couple of days now. The president is meeting with some African leaders today. How do you think that's going to go?
Well, they're not from Somalia. They're from Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. They're here to sign a U.S.-brokered peace deal. Trump is taking credit for solving the conflict between these two countries, and he's adding this to a long list of wars he claims to have ended. It's all part of him making the case for why he should get the Nobel Peace Prize.
That is NPR's Mara Liasson. Mara, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, what do Somali Americans think of all this? We begin in St. Cloud, Minnesota, with Minnesota Public Radio's Kirsty Marone.
About 100 people crammed into a meeting room at the St. Cloud Public Library. A sign on the podium read, "An attack on one is an attack on all." 27-year-old Faisa Omar opened the event with a song.
America, America, God sheds his grace on me.
Most of the Somalis in this area are U.S. citizens, either born here or naturalized, or are legal permanent residents. Many in the room said when they heard President Trump say that Somalis are garbage and contribute nothing, they felt the need to fight back. Abdi Kadir Bashir is executive director of the Center for African Immigrants and Refugees Organization.
We're not here tonight because we're afraid. We're here because we refuse to be silent.
Bashir said Trump's words don't define the Somali people.
Here is our message to your hate, Mr. President. You cannot defeat people who have already survived wars. We will outlast your trash talk.
Some said the national scrutiny and talk of a possible immigration crackdown in Minnesota are creating fear and anxiety. Farhia Iman, a behavioral health professional, says it's important for people to know there's more to the Somali community than the negative news stories.
We're just as American as anybody else. We're trying to raise children. We want them to be productive members of society. We want to be successful. There's a lot that goes into being Somali than just what the headlines say.
Mahmoud Mohammed was one of the first Somalis to come to St. Cloud in 1999 after fleeing that country's civil war.
We came from a destroyed country by war. It's not a choice. It's not a choice. It's necessity.
Mohammed voted for Trump twice, but says he now regrets it. He says the president is unfairly blaming Somalis when the vast majority are hardworking and law-abiding. For NPR News, I'm Kirsty Marone in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
For more on President Trump's comments about the Somali community, we're joined by Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. She's represented Minnesota's 5th congressional district since 2019. She is a Democrat who came to the U.S. from Somalia when she was 12 and is, of course, now an American citizen and represents the largest Somali American community in the country. Welcome, Congresswoman. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
You've been a favorite target of President Trump since you were elected, but it cannot have been easy to hear him make these comments about the entire Somali community. I just wondered what went through your mind when he said things like they contribute nothing and should go back to where they came from and so on.
His vile rant really wasn't a surprise to me. He has trafficked in racism, in xenophobia, in bigotry, in Islamophobia for as long as he has held office. This was a president who called African nations countries. This is a president that, when he was running for re-election, said Haitians were eating cats and dogs. And so for me, I mostly feel shame. I feel shame for him. I feel shame for our country. When he does these kind of unhinged rants he showcases to not just all Americans, but to the world that we elected just a really crazy, deranged old man who does not have the ability to control himself.
As you noted, making derogatory comments about immigrants has been part of the president's political brand, political profile, if you will, from the beginning. But do you have a theory about why his focus is now on Somalis?
Well, I believe that he's always trying to find a way to deflect attention whenever he is under scrutiny. And we know that in this moment, he and his Secretary of Defense are being accused of possibly committing war crimes. We are seeing the jobs numbers not living up to the promises that he made. We are seeing the American people feel the rise of costs on goods. We've heard him try to force and oversee the pedophile protection party in trying to protect the Epstein files. And so he's got a litany of things that he doesn't want to answer for. What he doesn't understand is that our community is not one to be intimidated or scapegoated.
Along with these comments, there are multiple news reports suggesting that the administration is expected to carry out ICE operations in Somali neighborhoods. Now, the head of immigration enforcement says that these neighborhoods aren't being targeted, but that they are going to pursue people with removal orders, etc. What are you telling people? What are you saying to your constituents?
You know, Somali Minnesotans have been preparing. We knew that when he got into office that he wasn't just going to go after people who are undocumented, that he was actually going to go after immigrants in general and possibly American citizens. There is a lot of chaos. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of noise. But the community is getting the support it needs, and it feels like it's on a playing field that they feel protected.
This is also taking place, though, at a time when there are reports of widespread fraud involving social service programs in Minnesota. According to prosecutors, as reported in a story in the New York Times, like all but 8 of the 86 people charged in 3 different fraud cases, one involving meals, one involving housing, one involving autism therapy, are of Somali ancestry. So I have 2 questions about that. First of all, do you have any reaction to that information?
Well, I'm grateful that, you know, we have laws that bring accountability to the taxpayers that have been defrauded, and they are going to jail for a really long time.
Do you have a theory about why it is that such a large percentage of the people implicated in these cases are of Somali ancestry?
I'm sure that we will learn from a lot of the cases that have gone to court on why they were able to, you know, commit the fraud.
Are you concerned that an entire community is being scapegoated because of the actions of this group of people?
It is. It's shameful in many ways because, you know, we are a country that believes the crime of one is not the crime of many. And, you know, these are people who are being prosecuted, and it is not fair to scapegoat the whole Somali community of whom have been law-abiding and grateful people that have chosen to make Minnesota their home.
That is Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. She's a Democrat from Minnesota. Congresswoman, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. It is 6:19. You're tuned in to People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for being here this Thursday morning. Coming up, we'll talk early bird fishing and getting ready for the ice fishing season with Jeff Sundin. He's also going to give us some good gift ideas, maybe some lures that you might want to get for the angler in your life. Partly sunny skies today, increasing clouds. We do have a chance of snow with highs 13 to 18 degrees. Breezy south winds 5 to 15, gusting up to 25. And tonight, chance of snow continues with cloudy skies, 7 to 17 degrees above zero, and west winds 5 to 15. Mostly cloudy for tomorrow, highs in the low to mid 20s. And overnight, we're looking at 6 below to 3 above. Current temperatures around our region. It is currently 9 below in Grand Rapids, 7 below in Brainerd, Hibbing at 12 below, 6 below right now in Bemidji. A lot of belows to say. 8 below in Park Rapids, and looking like Monoman at 3 below. Coming up later this morning, we bring you Headwaters at 9 o'clock, and your host today is DJ Dang. John Henningsgaard, our host for On the River this afternoon, 1 o'clock. Tom Habiger is our host tonight at 7 o'clock, one of the many new voices you'll hear on KAXE. We receive support from Klocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. They make traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years. Their tap room open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday, Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More info at KlockoBrewing.com.
Gone fishing. Babu, 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 babu. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You're bothering me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing,
bop, 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 bop,
oh, yeah.
Time to talk fishing on the Thursday morning show, and we are finding our temperatures below zero this morning all across northern Minnesota. But it is not quite yet ice fishing season. Our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin, joins us now. I'm sure somebody is. There's some safe places to go, right, Jeff?
There are. Every morning when you wake up, I imagine that there's more places to go this morning than there was yesterday morning.
That's true.
I've been watching the flag in the front yard, and it's sitting pretty still right now. And that overnight lows like that, single digits, it was supposed to even get a little colder, I think, but still zero or one or whatever it is right now is pretty good and chilly and without a big wind blowing. I saw some pictures from Lake of the Woods yesterday, which is there isn't anybody fishing out on the main lake yet, but there is a lot of ice up there. And I noticed that we've had, with all the windy weather that's come along over the last few weeks, there's lots of chunks. The lake is kind of frozen, at least as far as you can see out from the shore. But it looks like it's going to be one of those rough starts where a lot of those chunks are going to have to get filled in with snow, and the plows are going to have to work on them to make the passage seem sort of smooth going out there. And, of course, now by anybody that's really wanting to know or paying attention to it is aware by social media that Red Lake folks have been fishing up there for 4 or 5 days already and making their way to the shoreline spots. And by this weekend, I think travel by ATVs is going to be pretty widespread up there. So there'll be folks venturing out into a lot of more mid-lake type areas. So far it's been limited to the shoreline. And I see, too, now Grand Rapids area, some of the shallow lakes around here have already locked up and folks have begun fishing, walking. And the same is true for some of the lakes in the Bemidji area. So, yeah, things are underway. They're moving slow. I see the folks that are out fishing, though, from what you can see, you know, people these days are, they sort of bypass chatting with me, and they just go right straight to putting pictures on their Facebook page or Instagram or whatever. So you have to kind of read into it. Sometimes you can make one or two fish look like you had a pretty good time if you want to. But it does appear that people are catching some fish already. A lot of us are still waiting, though, for that 10-track rule. You know, I don't want to really go out on the lake until I see 10 other tracks going to someplace on that general neighborhood that I'm planning on fishing, because I'd rather be the one that's still on top of the ice instead of the one that has broken through. Having done that once in my life, I got it out of my system, and I don't ever feel like I need to do it again. There's nothing quite like the water swirling around the front end of your pickup truck to give you the idea that you should be a little bit more careful when you go out on the ice. So I kind of err on the side of caution these days.
Thank you. I am personally glad that you do that. Gosh, yeah. Well, So it's a little bit in between seasons, a little bit. So, but you're also paying attention to kind of the overall picture and what's happening with the DNR right now.
Yeah, the meeting season is in full swing. I've already been to the first round of them. The Lake Winnie work group was about a month ago, and then the technology work group, and then I had a meeting with the panfish work group, and now there's a little gap in between. And we're getting ready to start the second round of meetings of at least two out of three of those groups. And I noticed I'm signed up to go down to St. Paul on January 12th, 11th or 12th. I think it's the 12th. And the annual DNR roundtable meetings, which is encompasses all of the agencies in the DNR. It's not just fisheries. There will be presentations from every agency within the DNR has got time set aside and rooms. You kind of sign up for the presentations that you're the most interested in. So it could be if you're a deer hunter, you're going to have one set of interests. Parks and Trails will have something else on their mind. Fishermen will have another, so you kind of mix and match the different presentations that you want to go see. But they do every year, they send it out. The first wave is by invitation, and once they figure out how many people are going to respond to those invitations and sign up, there are some open seats that remain available, and so they just put out their announcement now, and there will be a link to this in the report this morning. But you can find it, probably do a quick Google search. There is an announcement now. First come, first serve availability to the DNR roundtable meeting, second weekend in January, and that's open to the public. So if you're interested in something like that, it doesn't cost anything to sign up and go. It's a full day. You start in the morning and have a session of work groups in the morning that you go to, then a little break for lunch, another session in the afternoon, and that's kind of followed up with a recap of the whole thing where everybody is all together in one big auditorium, and they kind of run back down through the highlights of all the presentations throughout the day. It's well worth the time of signing up and going down for that, so something that you might want to think about doing. And then if you're not quite that committed, but you still want to be involved in some stuff, the DNR Grand Rapids Fisheries Office is in the process of formulating the Lake Winnipegosh Management Plan. And we talked about this a few weeks ago when they first announced it. But in case folks didn't hear that or haven't really gotten around to doing something about it, that survey, your input into that, the management program for Lake Winnipegosh, that's a 10-year program, and your input does help shape the direction that they go when they're setting that up. So you can that's still available until December 12th. You can make commentary on that. And again, I'll have links to that, relink it again in today's fishing report, so you can do that. And of course, anybody that wants to, just contact the radio station and I can get links to you, Heidi, or whoever wants to help pass those around.
Sounds good. Well, so it's December 4th. It's only December 4th. On the other hand, it's already December 4th. So it seems like December will go fast. So let's start the conversation on what good gifts for anglers out there.
I noticed here in these last few days when I've had to place orders for some things that December goes a lot faster than you think it does, because if you don't get your orders in by a certain time, you can't really expect. It's not like the old days. We were just commenting. I have one particular place that I have to go to get a few things, and invariably they always tell me that it's going to ship on one day, and then I get a notice that it shipped the next day. And then they tell me when it's going to be delivered, and then I get a notice that it's not going to be delivered, and so on and so forth. So now is a good time to. And then I was thinking about it this morning. What would we really recommend? And it dawned on me that for one reason or another, throughout the fishing season, every summer, there's always things that I don't know about, and then somebody else either calls my attention to it or I stumble into it. And probably some of the discoveries that I made last summer, items that were really good, I don't know why I wouldn't tell folks that, you know, maybe you should stock up on those. If you've got an angler on your Christmas list and you want to have a little, you know, smile in a Christmas stocking or whatever, a lot of this stuff is not, they're not big purchase items. One of them, a guy on Lake Winnipegosh last fall, was actually, they were catching fish like crazy, and I wrote a little story about it. We passed by two or three different times, and eventually he just said, come over here and I'll give you what I'm using. And he handed me some jigs and some plastic tails. Now, the jigs were Northland Tackle item called Smeltonator jigs, and I'll have a image and a link to those. By the way, before we even talk any more about this, I don't know if folks really realize this or not, but I do not have any sponsors. So if I tell you that these items are something that I think you should buy, it's because I went to the store just like you do. I bought them with my own money. I used them, and they work. And that's why I'm bringing it up. I'm not. Nobody is going to pay me or send me an attaboy in the mail for making sure that I mention these things. So take that under advisement when we're talking about some of these items. Anyway, this Smeltonator jig, kind of an interesting shape. It comes in a variety of different colors, and they're intended to be used with soft plastics. And with the kind of shortages or the lack of availability of really good minnows at times throughout our fishing season, you know, we get more interested in artificial lures all the time. And the plastic tail that goes along with this is called an eye candy. And it's another Northland tackle. Now, the eye candy name is actually, it's a overall product. It's a category of products. There's a lot of sub items in that, you know, night crawlers and little shiner looking things, different shapes and sizes. But in this particular case, it was the 3.5 or 4 inch eye candy paddle tail. And those two items together, the Smeltonator jig and that paddle tail, was an awesome artificial lure for catching walleyes. And on Winnipegosh, where there was a good perch bite, the larger size perch were also interested in those paddle tails. And this fellow that turned me on to him, he kind of made an observation, and it turned out to be true in my mind, that larger profile, you still caught perch with it, but the small ones didn't really bother it. It was mostly only when you got good size 10, 11, 12-inch perch. So it was a real benefit to use those. So that's one of the items on my list. Another, a similar occurrence up on Upper Red Lake. We pulled in there early last year, and that on Red Lake for me has always been jig and minnow, jig and plastic tail, spinners with a minnow, something, always live bait. And friends and folks that I know have been, you know, telling me a lot about just, you know, we just go up there and we troll crankbaits. We never bring any other lures, just troll crankbaits. So I decided one day that I was going to do that. And we had put the boat in up at West Wind. And I was kind of drilling the guy in the bait shop there, you know, give me some ideas about the best crankbaits. And he sold me on some Berkeley flicker shads, a size 5. And they run pretty shallow, so you can fish them in 5-6 feet of water. And we spent a good day trolling just the Berkeley fishing shads. And we had good luck on Red Lake using that lure. So I'm going to put that in the stocking stuffer category. And finally, one of the things that folks ask me all the time, and this is over the last 10 to 15 years, I've pretty much drilled into the fishing reels that I use, because durability is a real problem sometimes. And surprisingly, a $200 or a $300 really expensive top end fishing reel, that may be really good for somebody who can take care of it and keep it clean and, you know, lubricate it regularly and so on and so forth. But for somebody like me, you need to just have reels that you can pull out of the rod locker. And folks without a lot of experience use them, and they don't always handle them correctly, and they get stepped on and dropped and so on and so forth. So the Fluger President has probably been the most reliable reel that I've ever encountered. Now, the price has gone up a little bit. They came up with a new revision of it. It was about a $59 to $69 reel. Now it's more like $79 to $89, but still pretty affordable in the new configuration. And if you're a price shopper, you can still shop around and find deals on the old reel. The previous model was a perfectly good. I had reels that were in use in the boat for 10, 12, 13 years without breaking down. So those can be found out there for a deal too. And so that Fluger President, get the size 20 for most of the ice fishing applications, the smaller, shorter type fishing rods for ice fishing, and get the size 25 if you want the ones that will probably work better on your jig and minnow type rods or jigs and plastic tails for the open water fishing season. And before you spend your money, make sure that you've already made your pledge to KAXE, and then shop with money that you have left over after you've already done that.
Okay.
And now this is just me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Before you get on the internet and start sending your money to places in countries that you can't even pronounce, stop in. You know, there's great bait and tackle stores in Bemidji. You got Northwoods, Grand Rapids. We've got Thousand Lakes, Longville. You've got Full Stringer and the One Stop Boat. There's good places to go. We've got Reeds and Walker. All these items that I mentioned, you can buy them from stores where the people know who you are and they appreciate your business. So as local as possible, if you can, shop local. And if you can't find them and you have to order them, go to the Berkley website for their products, or go to the Northland website. And by the way, right now, everybody is offering some kind of a Christmas sale where you can apply a promo code and get 20% or 15% off. And sometimes it works if you walk into the local store and say, hey, these things are on sale on the website. Sometimes they'll cut you a little slack on the purchase too. So be somewhat creative.
Yeah. Good reminder on local. We were just talking about that yesterday with folks, you know, building up the downtown of Bemidji and how, you know, big box stores are needed. And, you know, we all have to order online sometimes, but man, it makes a difference when you put your dollars locally. Hey, a quick question about first, I would like you to be a spokesperson for the Smeltinator. I think that could be kind of cool. But the first two that you talked about, you recommended, are you talking for ice fishing or for open water first?
These I was using them in open water, but similar items, we use a lot of that. Just scale it down to smaller sizes.
Okay.
Look through the product offerings on the websites, and you'll see a lot of things that are similar but smaller, and that's what we tend to use for ice fishing. And there are many, many days where we fish, especially crappie anglers, walleye anglers, there are getting to be more and more baits available that you can use for ice fishing, and you don't even have to bring, literally, you do not have to bring live bait with you. You can find plenty of artificial lures out there now. And it's kind of fun to experiment with them. You know, I fished with one fella who was actually cutting baits in half, and he would heat them up with a lighter and put two pieces. He liked the front half of one bait, but he liked the back half of another bait. So he was kind of gluing them together with heat. And you can get pretty inventive when it comes right down to it. So play around with that. So it's a lot of fun, and then it gives you kind of your own personal touch on how you're fishing too. You know,
sure.
Anybody can put a minnow on a hook and fish, but it takes a little creativity to make some of these plastic baits do what they're supposed to do.
Well, we're working on a gift guide from the morning show that'll be on our website. We'll include these, and then I'm sure we'll talk more next week.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks. Yep.
Jeff Sundin, you can read about some of the topics he was letting us in on, including roundtables for Lake Winnie and the DNR, at his fishing report at jeffsundin.com. Coming up, it's National Native News. We're learning about Canada's Assembly of First Nations. The chiefs have voted unanimously to reject any changes to the oil tanker ban off the northern coast of British Columbia. Thanks to Rural Pathways for their support. They help rural nonprofits and communities find funding, measure impact, strengthen strategy, and plan for the future. More information available on Facebook and at ruralpathways.org. Rural Pathways, bold solutions for quiet places.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Assembly of First Nations Chiefs have voted unanimously to reject any changes to the oil tanker ban off the northern coast of British Columbia. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the resolution came during a First Nations meeting in Ottawa, and less than a week after the federal government and Alberta signed a memorandum of understanding about a future pipeline.
The chiefs also voted in favor of requesting that Ottawa withdraw the memorandum, saying it could pave the way for a new pipeline through BC. The national chief of the AFN, Cindy Woodhouse-Nepinak, says Native leaders are united.
Canada can create all the MOUs, project offices, advisory groups that they want, but chiefs are united. When it comes to approving large national projects on First Nations lands, there will not be getting around rights holders.
Prime Minister Mark Carney also addressed the AFN meeting, saying he plans to meet with coastal British Columbia First Nations. Merle Alexander is a lawyer who represents two of those bands.
First Nations in Canada are feeling overwhelmed, that they're feeling as though there is that the duty to consult is being undermined. There also is a real pushback against this regression on environmental and climate change policies.
Last week, Carney and Alberta Premier Danielle Smith signed a memorandum of understanding to cooperate on energy. That opens the way for an exemption from the coastal tanker ban to support a new pipeline to the West Coast and easier access for Canadian oil to Asian markets. The ban has been in place for about 50 years. It bars oil tankers carrying more than 12,500 tons of crude oil from stopping or unloading at ports from the north end of Vancouver Island to Alaska. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
For 5 days, the Indian National Finals Rodeo is held in October in Las Vegas. The older generation passes the torch as up-and-coming riders compete for a shot at a world title. KNPR's Jimmy Romo attended the rodeo and has this story.
That don't make you want to quit. That makes you get hungry for another one.
Behind the bucking chute at the Indian National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas, or INFR, young riders suit up in their protective gear. There's a good chance a 2,000-pound bull could step on them after they hit the ground. Rodeo hands funnel the bull from their pens to the chute through a series of gates. Then they set them one by one to let the rider get on. When it's time, the gates open. and the animal's buck repeatedly, trying to throw the rider off its back. A junior bull rider has to hold on to a bull with one hand for at least 6 seconds to score points. Cassius Thomas, who's 17, held on long enough to secure his win in the Junior Bull Riding INFR World Championship.
Well, I just love the feeling, love the adrenaline, and sure love the money.
Cassius's father, Daniel Thomas, 52, was also a bull rider in his youth. Both are enrolled members of the Navajo Nation.
Sometimes the Navajo Nation, I believe, this is the way of life, given the horses, the livestock, the sheep. So it all goes back to that.
Children are inspired by watching their older relatives participate in the sport. That was the case for Cassius. It was also the case for bronc rider Ethan Heisman-Yazzi. The 18-year-old finished at the top of his category to win the Rookie Saddle Bronc Riding INFR World Championship. Daniel Thomas was in the stands watching other junior bull riders get thrown before scoring any points. Then it was time to watch Cassius take his turn.
World champion Cassius Thomas!
The feeling of while the bull was bucking, I could kind of anticipate what it felt like. So I was moving like back and forth, and I was like moving around like I was dancing or something.
Ethan and Cassius will go home with belt buckles and cash prizes, making the trip to Vegas worth the gamble.
That was Jimmy Romo reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and people like you. National Native News heard all over the country. It's one of the news sources that we rely on to give us news you're not going to get anywhere else. Your membership here makes this kind of programming possible.
Yes, and we just want to give a big shout to everyone who has donated in this past year, and particularly during the Give to the Max two weeks ago.
Yeah,
that's right. So we are still looking to help finish our year strong. You can give at kaxe.org.
Coming up later, we're talking to the CEO and president of AMPERS. Joel Glazer is going to join us. That's the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. He's going to tell us more about the 17 stations across the state of Minnesota that are independent, not part of Minnesota Public Radio, and what these cuts have meant and how you can help the statewide network.
It is going to be partly sunny today with increasing clouds over the day, chance for some snow, highs in the teens, a little windy from the south with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. The moon looks beautiful this morning.
The super moon.
Yeah, isn't it a full moon tonight?
I think so.
Yeah. So if you're up, look up in the sky.
Yeah, going to be a little cloudy, but it was still showing last night, even if it's a little cloudy.
It was, yep, for sure. We want to thank Grand Rapids State Bank for their support of programming committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Well, I'm sorry to say that you are going to miss out, Kari, on the book swap next week at KBXC.
I know. I am too.
Sorry. I mean, this could be so, this is just up your alley. Swap A.
Right.
Books B. You know?
I know. Hearing you guys talk about it yesterday morning, I was like, gosh, dang it.
I know. I mean, if you want me to swap something
Scope
for
something
you,
out.
Right.
Possibly.
Okay.
Very possibly.
You trust me?
Of course I do.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Coming up today.
Hold on though. Book swap. Next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Five to seven?
5:30 to 7:30, KBXE. Very fun. You're going to be able to talk about books you like. You're going to be able to meet What We're Reading host Tammy Bobrowski. The Red Door Bookstore from the Bemidji Public Library will be there, so you can buy some used books that help support the library. And library staff's going to be there to kind of talk about what they're facing with the funding. And I heard we're making some bookmarks.
Not like you are, but
well,
no, just
no,
like,
I mean, not even involved with me, that there's some book crafts.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. If you want to,
you know, but also like you just get to go hang out with people who are there because they like books.
I know.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like a concert experience where, you know, you're going with other people who enjoy music.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's like you get to put like your own little ad, like to meet a new friend group or something to say,
yeah,
do you like books and reading? And, you know,
does anyone want to start a silent book club?
Yeah.
Does anyone want to, you know?
we're setting it up. We're going to connect you with other book lovers. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're hoping to do more of these in the future.
Stay tuned this morning during Headwaters at 9. DJ Dang is your host today. Going to be featuring Spin That Ish, the latest edition, where Malachi, Dan, and myself are talking about some of our favorite releases from November. And it is the time of the year. You know, we're gearing towards the end of 2025. And so it's always a time to look back over the past year. And for the music team, this is particular, you know, we're looking through the music lens of what releases we loved this year, what were bangers for KAXE, what were our listeners into this year. We'd love to hear your top picks from the year, whether it's albums, songs, something you heard on KAXE, or something you found on your own. Love to hear from you. You can email music at kaxe.org or text 218-326-1234.
Question for you, Kari. We were just talking with some family last night about what, you know, what they might want for Christmas or something. We're doing some exchanges with some kids and stuff. And, you know, I had a moment of like realizing my age. So you're talking about great music and all this kind of stuff. Not, you know, let's say 15 years ago, you might buy someone a CD of of some good music. What would you do nowadays?
Well, my 13-year-old is getting back into CDs.
Okay.
A CD player is actually on his Christmas list.
All right.
So
Do you still have that CD?
Discman?
Could you?
I don't know what happened to it. It was in my drawer here at work forever. Oh my gosh. I used to, when I first started here, I used to bring that Discman out to the gardens with me when I was and listened.
It was my leftover. I still have a cassette one.
That was like not that long ago.
I know. That's what I mean. It's sort of hard to like figure, you know, everything that was asked was all electronic stuff, which is fine.
Yep.
We understand.
Sure.
But,
I mean, kids love vinyl too. I do think that is a good medium. And my 13-year-old is collecting both.
Okay.
At the moment.
All right.
But he really wants a CD player for his room because he just feels like probably practically a little easier, which I agree.
Yeah.
A little less bulky for his bedroom. Versus a record player.
Right.
And, you know, he's at the age where he wants to enjoy his music by himself, not with us.
Yes. Okay. So I mean, the answer is not necessarily like a streaming service subscription kind of thing.
But that also might not be a terror. I mean, I would also see kids enjoying something like that too.
Yeah.
I heard someone say the other day about, you know, there's lots of conversation around streaming versus physical versus supporting the artist and all these things. And I saw someone post that, kind of flipping it on its head a little bit. And I'm not here promoting either. I am just saying, this person was saying streaming could be an add-on, but you first and foremost need to support the artist. But just because you stream something also doesn't mean you're a bad person. But like, think of it as like, support first, buy something from the artist, and then stream whatever you want. You know, like just kind of using it as an add-on. So I kind of liked that framing of it. So it's like, you just don't feel, because it's hard to be a consumer today.
Yeah, it is.
In all the ways. Music, groceries, anything. It's just really hard to be a good consumer.
We'd love to hear from you this morning. And, you know, almost the opposite of that is our question of the week. Handmade gifts. What have you received that you really appreciated? What have you given? I've had people giving me vanilla.
That's the best.
I know.
Vanilla is not cheap, and homemade vanilla is the best.
And I'm so confused by that. How do you make vanilla?
Oh, you just vanilla beans, but vanilla beans are expensive.
Right. Okay.
And then you just pop them in vodka and let them sit for 3 months.
Gotcha.
And I've made it many times. That's how I usually use vanilla. And then you can even reuse the beans. So I've done it. So I've just put the beans in. I don't split them or anything. I just pop the beans in like a cheap vodka.
Yeah.
And then for the next round, I'll like cut them open and then let them sit in there for like 3 to 4 months, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just sort of confused by that, but I, Kathleen on our board of directors gave me some vanilla once. I used hers up, but someone else had left me some. It wasn't you, was
that's
it?
No, it wasn't, but that's a great gift. I haven't even thought about doing that.
Yeah, someone left it at my desk. I'm using that one right now, and I don't know who did that, so thank you.
What?
Yeah.
That's a fun little bonus.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about. If it's something you've been given or something that you make, these are great ideas because it kind of gets you more, you got to put some time in. It gets you a little more excited or connected to, you know, the people you care about in your life. And
100%. That's why I've always liked doing, I'm not doing holiday cards this year. I'm on an every other pattern.
Nice.
But I handwrite the labels and my husband's always like, I can print these. I can just make a label, you know, like, and print them all. But what I appreciate about doing it is it, even though I'm not making a gift for them, it like is, I'm giving 2 minutes of time thinking about the people that I'm sending this card to.
Yeah.
So it just like, I don't know, it makes it mean more versus just like, if I'm going to spend the money and take the time to do this, I might as well be, I don't know, have some thought into it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you this morning. Give us some gift ideas that handmade gifts. You can text 218-326-1234.
It does make the process about 8 times longer.
Yes.
So that is also
true. But, you know, you got some nice Christmas vinyl playing, you know. Yeah. Nothing wrong with
Christmas
that.
Christmas movie on in the background.
Yeah.
Down for it. You are listening to the Thursday Morning Show. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Heidi Holton, where we receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a lifestyle magazine since 1997, a local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country, lakecountryjournal.com.
This is The Set List on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malik Tycoons. We are taking a look at 4 shows this Thursday and Friday, December 4th and 5th in Gilbert, Grand Rapids, Nisswa, and Bemidji. Thursday night, you can find Rich Mattson playing solo at the Ore House in Gilbert. The rock and roller has been busy with new group Rangers, his regular band the North Stars, and many other projects, and he's got many shows lined up over the holiday season. He plays at the Ore House every first Thursday. Music begins at 6. Another first of the month show is the Clearwater Hot Club, bringing jazz to Rapids Brewing this Friday at 6. The group is trying something new this time, with bassist Matthew Miltich taking the lead on vocals. He'll be joined by Sam Miltich, of course, on guitar, Doug Haining on sax, Nathan Norman on drums, and Doug Pickall filling in at bass. Also Friday night, guitar-toting troubadour Jack Klatt is playing Grassroots Concert Series in Nisswa, 7 p.m. at the Journey Church. Klatt is a country blues aficionado who draws from many different American genres, releases music on acclaimed independent label Yep Rock, and is described by Grassroots director Kelly Smith as having an unfair amount of swagger. One more Friday show is Morning Bird at Bridget's Irish Pub in Bemidji, 7 p.m. The Jill Burks-led group will be bringing the full band with Josh Palmy, Shane Kingsland, and Jim Piedola, mixing folk, rock, and country, and songs from their debut album Echoes in the Meadow, plus a variety of covers. Do you have information on live music you'd like us to know about? Email music@kaxc.org. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
You can hear more about music throughout the morning. We'll be telling you about some of the live music in the region, as well as all the cool events happening. There are so many throughout our community.
So many right now.
So many people preparing to kind of present fun stuff for families, for everyone. This is a really interesting event, I think. Today, there's a sensory-friendly Santa event, and that goes on through December 6th. It's at Northland Arboretum in Baxter. You can register for a 15-minute time slot and learn more at northlandarb.org.
And in Hibbing, there is the Crescendo Youth Orchestra is hosting the Fantastic 50s Yuletide Festival. That's at the library from 4 to 7 tonight, with visits from Santa, a book giveaway, crafts, nostalgic drink bar of coffee, cocoa, and soda floats, also features performances by the orchestra and the Hibbing City Band. When I was on yesterday, I was trying to hit all the things happening, mm-hmm. and there's a lot. It's great.
And if you are someone who wants to make something, but you don't quite know how to start, artist Nelia Harper French, she is one of the artists in the attic at the Old Central School in Grand Rapids. And now through December 6th, you can stop by noon to 4 and make an ornament. All the materials will be provided. It'll be also going on during the First Friday Art Walk. I did get another verification that Santa will be there Friday night.
Cool.